So that's where our rec teams are getting hurt. And gone on to what you said about starting at 13. You know what? In California, you know, the rest of the country, obviously we talk about the different zones of people, different playing.
Sure.
Shut it down in February. Shut it down in March. Go March to June. Go back to rec leagues. Let your nine best players be on six different teams so they can be the best player on those six teams.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the world's favorite youth baseball podcast, Clearing the Bases, featuring Coach Jimmy Filangieri. I'm David Friedman. I want to thank you for coming along on this ride with us.
I want to touch on the fact that, you know, we talked about the international. One of the things I love about sending teams is it's evolving in this world and the game, because when you go over to Europe and they're building, it reminds me of the United States 20, 25 years ago when I was coming up, because it's all their leagues. They take such pride in their community league and they call it their club. And I when our kids are going over there, they're seeing a different side that we got to see. And I'm not saying it's better because they look up to us, but I am saying it's simplified.
Two of the best baseball minds that I know right there, and Paul Gallo and Mark Pudge Jorman. I could have sat there and I could have talked to these two gentlemen for hours upon hours about baseball, about high school baseball, youth baseball, training young players. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, we've talked to a lot of people on this show in the last 3 years, and these guys are right up there at the top. So let's sit back, put your AirPods on, put your headphones on, listen to it in the car, however you listen. Make sure you listen closely to Paul and Pudge. So we're keeping things rolling here at the ABCA convention, and you know what? We've had on some guys from Kansas City from the Youth Baseball Summit, and I ran into two more guys here at the convention. We have Pudge Jorman and we have Paul Gallo. And guys, let me tell you something. I've explained before that the people that I met out in Kansas City are all great baseball minds, great baseball people, and just overall good people. These guys are no different than what I've explained. So why don't you guys introduce yourself? Paul, go ahead and tell me a little bit.
Yeah, I'm Paul Gallo. I work with the LA Dodgers Training Academy and EL1 Sports. We have 15 indoor facilities around the country. Work with MLB, with play ball, and I'm on the youth committee here at the ABCA.
Go ahead, Pudge.
Mark Jorman. I go by Coach Pudge, and I've been blessed to coach high school baseball in my 37th year at James Madison High School. I've been the head coach for 28 years in Northern Virginia, and I own MVP Baseball School and MVP International, where we send teams in multiple sports, but baseball is our main sport, overseas to compete throughout the world. We've done Japan, we've done all through Europe, Latin America, Australia. It's been phenomenal. So just blessed, just love the game. So
yeah, but you didn't give yourself credit about all of the state championships that you've won, okay? So I want to let everybody know that Pudge is a coach for, what is it, four or five state champions?
We just won our fourth this past year.
Four
state? We've had
state...
six as a school, but four, I've been a part of four of them.
Okay, so those of you out there that coach baseball know that that's no small feat. So anyway, guys, Paul, give me your take on what we did out in Kansas City, because I got to tell you guys, I left there like, you know, walking on like clouds.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of left there thinking we could have gone a whole another day and a half, still talking what we were doing. We had a bunch of like minds trying to keep the game of baseball, trying to get it growing again. Not that I think it's as bad as what the Aspen Institute said. I believe that the numbers, I'm sure Rob Hani's been on here talking about, you know, the drop, 21% drop, but we don't have the travel numbers. But, you know, a bunch of like minds on how to keep kids interested through playing in 60, 90 fields in order to, you know, keep the bank, you know, the game that was invented here in the United States that is played better than anywhere right here. And just the ideas of education, who should get involved, USA Baseball, the ABCA, MLB, in order to keep the game growing the way we know it can, because it's a great game.
Awesome. What do you think, Pudge?
I agree with Coach Gallo 100%. And first of all, I really wanted, before I jump back to that, Rob Honey, when you mentioned Rob, Rob's a Northern Virginia guy. We coached against each other. We actually played in five times last year. We both had a first rounder, and we played in three championship games, conference, region, state. Rob, I actually coached Rob in high school as an assistant. But what he's doing in the game here at the ABCA and the Youth Summit is extraordinary. I don't know where he gets all the energy, but he's always been that guy. And but I do think, going back to what Coach Gallo said, is I think it's been losing kids from Little League to the big diamond has been an issue for years. I don't think that's a new thing. That's my opinion. And I think it's because the Little League experience is so community-based. And now with travel getting, I think the bigger issue is with travel getting more involved at the 12U level, I think that that's taking away a little bit from the community. One thing I got involved with years ago, we run the Rest of Warrior program. Rest in Little League is where I coach with my boys and my daughter. And we started what's called league-based travel. And we're trying to get that to catch on, where the Little Leagues, kind of the kids in your community, still play. It's, I call it advanced placement baseball, not travel. It's like, you know, the classroom. It's just kids that want a little more coaching, play a little bit more, and we work with the Little League. So I think if we can continue to grow that and transition them to the big field, you're going to see those numbers start dropping, because we've got it. You know, it's hard. You leave community-based baseball, now you're going out to this big world that people just are misinformed about. So I do think, I love the game. I think our game's, you know, we've got work to do. We've got a little bit off the beaten path because there's so many options, but we just kind of got to get back in our lane a little bit.
Yeah, I love that, because, you know, I had said it, you know, while we were in Kansas City, that I don't believe travel baseball should start until 13. But that's, you know, like everybody said, you know, that ship has sailed. You're not going to fix that. There's too much money involved. Correct. I get that. Okay, but to the point of what you just said, I like that idea. So, and correct me if I'm wrong the way I'm interpreting it, but you take kids that are in a community-based league, okay, and they travel to maybe play other community-based leagues. Is that the way it works?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I don't think it's – here's my thing. I think we've – like, even at our summit, this was our second year. We had the first one in D.C. last year. This one was – it's getting better, and you get that many really good minds that care about the game first. I don't think it's – we all know there's issues. There's issues in everything, in every league, in every sport. I think it's – okay, let's get to the answers. How can we correct it? How can we inform people better? How can we – you know, in league-based travel, everybody's afraid to – do the new. It's like the old school people. So you're fighting against change, but change, we have to change as coaches. We have to adapt and adjust. The game's different with social media and coaching high school than it was 10 years ago, much less 5 years ago. So if we can do a better job of working together and creating a mindset where, you know, everybody will listen a little bit, not just talk, and not do what's best for themselves at first. And, you know, we all have that. I own a facility, but I'm a high school coach first. I'm a baseball lover first.
So. Yeah. What are you seeing in California, Paul?
So we have something called ABD, where it's kind of the same thing, where it's a travel-based, where the teams will get together and do the travel with the, you know, with the playing against other leagues, against the other players and things like that. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of why I have a job. You know, in California, obviously we play year-round. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I kind of throw out 90% of travel teams are being run by dads.
Yes.
You got the GBGs, you got the Legacies, you got the CBAs, you got the teams that are run by coaches. And then once those best players are taken out of the leagues, now these dads who are coaches a lot of the times, Rob Honey said it all the time, well, the league isn't competitive anymore, because their sons are the best ones in the league, and they want it. They don't see the value in playing in that league, and so now they take that next level, and all they're left are the kids that are playing baseball basically because it's that time of season for them to play. But now they don't have all those dads that were coaching, and I'm you know, I've said the same thing as Rob said before, so that's where our rec teams are getting hurt, and gone on to what you said about starting at 13, you know what? In California, you know, the rest of the country, obviously we talk about the different zones of people, different playing.
Sure.
shut it down in February. Shut it down in March. Go March to June. Go back to rec leagues. Let your nine best players be on six different teams so they can be the best player on those six teams and not be the ninth player on your best team. Now you got six shortstops. You got six number one pitchers. You got six catchers. You got guys who are in that situation as a number three hitter, number four hitter, and now if they come up as a number nine hitter on your all-star team, they're ready to go.
Right.
So not only do they not get the reps, but they also don't get the coach.
And plus, in that scenario, you're creating leaders. You're creating those leaders that we're trying to do. And the other thing, too, I want to clarify, because we mentioned a lot about Rob Hahne. Rob Hahne, and I've mentioned it on the show, but I just want to remind everybody, is the chairman of the Youth Travel Committee here at the ABCA. But, yeah, I mean, create those leaders.
Can I touch on that for a second?
Oh, sure.
That you are so spot on, Coach. That's part of what the league-based travel is for us. We shut the advanced placement down for the month of April so they can focus on being the best Little League player and integrating into their Little League team. And we tell our Warriors, your job is to be the leaders on your team. There's going to be the 10th, 11th, 12th kid who are not those players. Your job is to not act like you're better than they are. It is to help them and to lead them. And I was fortunate to sit in a meeting yesterday with Dayton Moore, right? You guys know Dayton, and former GM of the Rangers, and Lonnie Goldberg, vice president now of the Rangers. I mean, Dayton was with the Royals. He's now with the Rangers. Lonnie's with the Royals. Coach Schlossnagel from Texas A&M, and the ABCA guys. And we were talking about the fact that the worry is right now is, like Dayton said, he met a kid who just, he wasn't very good. He's not very talented. And he was in tears because at 15, there was no place for him to play baseball. And we were becoming such a high-end game that we can't forget about the guys that want to play for the love of the game. Now, here's the issue. With my middle school teams, my MVP Terps teams in our facility, it's not the players. It's some of the parents. Because if they're on our quote-unquote fourth team or fifth team, which is really a developed, maybe undersized kids or they're not as talented, we're trying to offer them opportunities to continue to play the game and improve until they grow or, you know, play. But then the parents get upset because they're not on the best team or they're not, you know. Sometimes my advice would be parents, let them play because they love the game and tell them to just keep working. We know what we're doing and trust the people that are doing it. And that's, I don't know if we could ever win that part of it, you know.
Said it a million times that the worst evaluator of baseball talent is a parent. Okay, there's too much emotion involved. They can't see it the way we can from the outside. So, yeah, to your point, you know, a lot of what we do has to be educating parents because they're such a big part of the youth baseball world.
I'll add also too that a few weeks after our summit in Kansas City, I got a call from Jeff Diskin, who's in charge of the youth development with the Royals. I probably have his title wrong, but he was going to be in the MLB meetings in Nashville, and he had set up a meeting with Chris Marinac and David James of the executive committee for MLB. And David James was involved with Little League, and he's on the board of USA Softball, and now he's the vice president in charge of youth learning of baseball and softball for MLB. And David brought up a great point. Baseball is a spring sport. It's played from March to June. And after June 15th, only our best players continue to play. So you've got an age group from 6 to 10, Little League, Pony, whatever it is, they're done. If they're not all-stars, they're done. So the only kids that are getting better are the better players. So David said, why don't we have a summer league where we set up something where those kids can continue to play and learn if they want to become better players, because just the, you know, the amount of time that they do it isn't enough, because there really isn't a summer sport. The kids go on summer vacation and there's really nothing going on. Now, I don't think it needs to be a 6-week program, but maybe 2 weeks at a time where these 6 to 10 year olds get to come out and play. And David, you know, was talking about, you know, Major League Baseball would be all behind that. Let him go to a team camp. Let him go to a minor league camp and learn, you know, get a few more weeks, play games, do a little bit extra. And I thought that was a great idea, too, where we get additional learning on for that.
Right. Well, I like the idea of having that summer league. And also what you said about possibly having summer camps, which is, to me, even more important, because maybe, just maybe, you can get the high school coaches to come and run those camps and actually take these kids and help them rather than, because, again, you know what's probably going to happen is that they're going to get together, they're going to play during the summer, maybe or maybe not, they won't get any instruction. Well, if you could do the camp and get these guys who know what they're doing to come and instruct these kids, what a great world.
Well, that's a great point. Like, and you're in California, Coach, right? So in Northern Virginia, when it's 30 degrees when I go home, I actually have to fly back tonight. And everybody's, you know, they're like, why are you going back tonight? You know, this is, I don't want to, but tomorrow I have owned a facility. We've got 750 kids during the winter. That's when that is our training time.
Sure.
And I feel the obligation Sundays. I'm going to tomorrow. I will go back and work starting at 8 a.m. with a 12U team, a middle school team, a high school team, and then a group of college hitters. So I've got 4 hours, and I don't want to miss those college guys as they're going back. And so that is our instructional time. And it's interesting. I want to touch on the fact that, you know, we talked about the international. One of the things I love about sending teams, it's evolving in this world and the game, because when you go over to Europe and they're building, it reminds me of the United States 20, 25 years ago when I was coming up, because it's all their leagues. They take such pride in their community league and their they call it their club. And I when our kids are going over there, they're seeing a different side that we got to see. And I'm not saying it's better, because they look up to us, but I am saying it's simplified. And I will say this. One of the things I've had to do when we talk about educating the parents, and I think this has been huge for my organization, I always take a look and evaluate myself and what can we do better with. I brought commissioners in. I wanted the open line of communication, because that's from the summit. This is where I learned it. And I started doing Zooms, and I meet with them. And I tell the parents, they may not like what they hear, but I say, this is what I do. And I've got 38 years of resources. And I'm not, you're a car salesman, and you may be an accountant. And that's, I don't come to you and tell you how to sell cars or
right.
how to count money. You need to trust in our professionalism and the resources that we have, as we were all talking about earlier before we came on the air. And when you know, we've got these resources, and this, you know, you got 10,000 coaches here at the ABCA. We all have relationships. So, you know, you may not like what you hear, but we're going to tell you the truth. And sometimes that's the thing. I can sugarcoat it. I'm not going to promise you anything, but I'm going to promise you we're going to tell you the truth.
And I, you know, again, I believe that's so important. And anybody that listens to this show has heard me say it a million times. I am brutally honest, because if you don't tell them the way it really is, okay, now you're leading them in the wrong direction. Okay, it is what it is. We're professionals.
They may not like it, but they'll respect it eventually, and they'll probably come back if they. Because the easy thing is, right, Coach, leave. Quit. Oh, I'm going to take my son here. You said earlier you have 6 shortstops instead of 1. You know, because when they get to, I don't want all my high school kids playing on one team. I used to do that. We used to, when it first started coming out, we had our own league, our base, like they would all come to my high school. I'm like, wait a minute, we got to develop more. You know, and so now it's just easy. Oh, well, it's like the portal, right, of travel baseball. We're going to go out and go somewhere else. I tell people now, they go, Coach, I'm upset. No, because they're going to come back, because that person that's promised them the world, they can't produce it.
Right.
Because we know that. And they'll respect the fact that we were honest with them.
Very important.
Yeah, Budge, I've said the past couple of years that if I ever start up a travel organization, it's going to be called The Grass is Always Greener.
Fact. Again.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, but I agree 100% is that, you know, again, I said it, you have to be honest, because otherwise, you know, there's a lot of, and unfortunately, in the travel baseball world, there's a lot of snake oil salesmen, okay? So they're going to tell you whatever you want to hear just so that they can get you to come and play for them so that they could, you know, get their fee or whatever their reasoning is. But, man, I would rather look somebody in the eye and tell them the truth and run the risk of possibly losing them as a player, but I could sleep at night. Because I told them the truth.
You know, it's funny. A game changer for me came from my daughter, Samantha, who's at College of Charleston. I couldn't be more proud of her, what she's doing, you know, coaching Division I baseball, you know, and Director of Ops.
That's fantastic.
But my son, Josh, we were in a hotel room at a travel tournament years ago. And I have this dad call me. I'm on the phone in a hotel room, and they're waiting on me, listen. And here I am. I find myself trying to explain. This dad's like, why should I pick your organization at 13U instead of this one? And I'm, like, here recruiting this kid. Like, what am I doing? And I get off the phone, and my kids look at me, and they go, Dad, seriously, you're sitting there having to try to talk a 12U dad into his kid. Dad, you don't, that's not you. You don't need to do that. Like, if they don't want to come, then they're, shame on them. They don't know what they're missing. And my son Josh, he's going to be a heck of a college coach. He's still playing. He plays national champion Division III Lynchburg.
Oh, great.
Proud of him. And he's going to be a tremendous college baseball coach one day soon. And as well as younger brother Trevor, they've kind of been around it. But Josh looked at me and said, Dad, it's all about the why. Why do you play? When you're in Little League, it should be for fun. When you're in middle school, it's about trying to make your high school team. And I'm sitting here going, I'm learning all this from my own kids, and I can't figure it out. So, you know what? It takes a village, I guess. And sometimes if you just listen to your kids. But after that, I said, I'm never going to sit and I just won't have those recruiting discussions with 12 and 13-year-old kids. We're not going to do that. So.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why I left travel baseball was, you know, because of all of that nonsense that goes on, you know, and their parents are paying $5,000-$6,000. Then you throw, you know, the travel and the meals, and they're paying like close to $10,000 for these kids to be on a team. Now, we only have them for a very short period of time, 6 months maybe, between winter workouts and the season. How much could we really teach them in that time? And I couldn't do it anymore.
Well, I think Coach Gallo would say it, to agree probably. The problem is the focus. Instead of staying in the moment, because kids come out of Little League, the smaller kid ends up being a great player because he outworks the bigger kid.
Right.
The big kid in Little League, Billy Bob, you know, who's 6'2 as a 12-year-old, who we're watching on ABC in the Little League World Series, he's probably done growing, unless he's Bryce Eldridge, who's ended up being 6'8". But the big kid maybe doesn't work as hard as that young kid who has the chip on his shoulder, you know, and that's what I tell kids all the time. But at 13, he may not be as good or he doesn't help the 13U team, A team win because he's not as strong. And that's, my kids were undersized. I told my boys, they're Division III players, but they're good because they're fundamentally sound. And Josh plays with a chip every day because he's always been that undersized, that small guy. And, you know, I would just tell him, don't focus on that. Focus on being the best you can be and the mindset. But I love the chip. The chip is the most important part because it sets the tone for the work ethic. You know, so again, some of these parents, when they're 12 and 13, their kid's the biggest kid, and they think he's the second coming of this next guy. It's not, and it's hard to tell people that. And like I said, I just think that, again, size shouldn't dictate it. But I'm listening to these guys, like I said yesterday in this meeting, and it was so spot on. You know, tomorrow's leaders might not be the best players. You know, I told my son, I was watching him hit in the cage before he came here the other day, and he said, "You didn't say anything to me." And I said, "Well, I couldn't hit like that." I said, "I've never seen you barrel somebody, but what do you want me to say?"
Right.
He goes, "Well, you were working with those other guys." I go, "Josh, I've never seen you do that before. Like, I know you, I mean, you know, you were one of the top hitters in the country last year because of that. But I said, at some point, you know what you're doing. I can't help you anymore, you know, so."
Well, what you just talked about, I've said a million times that I've seen it time and time again, that those kids that everybody left out in right field and, you know, they buried them on the bench and all that, those kids wind up playing in college where your 12-year-old shortstop is, you know, I don't know, welding or something. They're not playing baseball anymore. What do you think?
And just building what you guys are saying, you know, the chip on the shoulder. But you do have that talented kid who has that chip in the shoulder. He's going to be the All-American. He's going to be the D1 player.
100%.
And I'd be remiss in not mentioning my high school coach, Mo Mohart. He played with the Cubs in 1961. And he was supposed to come up, and he was supposed to be the next first baseman. Well, Ernie Banks couldn't play shortstop anymore, so they moved him to first base. So Mo, I mean, at that time, there's no free agency. There's no, you know, trades or anything like that. So he said, "Well, I mean, there's nothing I can do but sit in the bench or play AAA." So he left professional baseball, got his teaching credential, and started coaching high school baseball. He didn't get his release from the Cubs till 1972. he had already been coaching high school for 8 years because of the way that they owned his contract. So he came into us in Northwest Connecticut, right, where we practiced until Easter in the small gymnasium, 84-foot gymnasium. And his mantra was, I know that if I'm not practicing, someone else out there is. So that's what we learned. And that's the way we learned it. And from my dad and from my next-door neighbor who played AAA baseball, you knew growing up, and again, a town of 10,000 people, but we had six Little League teams. And you knew that when you came up to the majors as a 10-year-old, you were going to sit for three innings and you were going to play for three innings. And you knew that. And you also knew that that's not when you got better. You got better at practice. The parents that realize that you're not getting better in games, the games are kind of cherry on the top of the sundae, right? You're getting better in games. Work hard in games. Get better in games. Coach Savage talked about this morning, you know, when he was at USC and he had a guy sit for 28 days, came in the World Series, pitched 3 1/3 for them for that national championship game, and you're ready to play.
You're ready to play.
And that's the attitude. Parents have to realize the game is not the process. The process is the practice, and the game is the end result.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, again, we talk about it all the time. During the game, okay, as a coach, nothing's happening for me during that game. There's nothing. I have a pen in my back pocket. I'll watch if I see something that I don't like. I make a note, and that's it. When the game is over, okay, guys, I'll see you tomorrow for practice, and then we'll work on that. It's not the game. The game is to see what we did in practice, if it's working.
Yeah, and that's one of the tricks. One of the tricks to coaching, like for me, being a high school coach, being, you know, owning an organization, we've got 44 teams, right, in middle school, high school, 12U, and then also with the Little League guys, it's a different hat you're wearing, much like an infielder to a pitcher, a dual threat, you know, a two-way guy, right?
Yeah.
Put your pitching hat on, put your catching, or, you know, whatever it is. But I think that, you know, I just think that that's the tough part. In high school, you got to play the best player. You're going to play. And I tell my parents, you know, when I always enjoyed it years ago when I first started, I thought I could make everybody happy. That's the first part of coaching. You got to learn is you're not. You're no matter not. How good a person you are, like Fitz said earlier in his speech, at the end of the night, as long as you know what you're about. But I always tell the parents, I have one night a year, my high school parents, where I say, I'm going to play the best kids. If you want to come in and talk playing time, I'm going to give you your answer tonight because this is going to be the answer. That kid who played in front of your son that day, he was the best option. He was the best player. And you know what? They get an opportunity every day in practice, 6 days a week when we're not playing, okay, at practices to perform, okay? Coach, you tell me, but have you met a coach yet that hasn't played the best players in high school? I mean, you know, are you going to play the – if a kid's – you know, I don't know a lot of coaches that – don't want
well,
to win.
I'm going to tell you something before you jump in, Paul. I'm going to tell you something. My parent meeting with my high school parents is, I'll use last year as an example, okay? So I had 24 players. And I look at the parents and I say, I have 24 players here. Do you think, really, that I could get every one of them in every game? So the fact of the matter is, there are kids that are sitting here right now that will not play very much.
Well, I tell them, they will. You earn the right to play in our uniform. And when I can trust you to play to our standard, you'll know that you're playing in our uniform at the varsity level because you earned it. Now, at the JV, we're going to get those kids work. We want to see them develop. We're going to train them up. Okay. Now, in the middle school and little league sectors, it's different. Travel ball, or as I call it, advanced placement, we're there to develop every single kid. And I thought what you said to go back to it was – when we were in Little League in middle school, you have to, I think the coach's responsibility is teach them, your best players, how to sit, how to have to watch, how to know that they're not entitled to play every inning of every game. Learning how to sit and be a great teammate is more important than how much you play. And that's where the parents struggle a little bit. Not all, some. But I will say this, you know, in terms of, and then that youth level. You know what I thought in Kansas City? I think Coach Klein's his name, the speedball.
Yeah.
I thought that was outstanding. Like, you know, we talk about adapting and adjusting to go back to that. that's something I'm going to go back actually and use in my summer camps, because that's going to put more fun. I want to spice up what we're doing, and I think that's, you know, they do it as a league, but I'm going to use that in camps to create more fun for that 6 to 10 year old. Let them play, let them go play, let them love the game, hit the home run, you know. So anyway, I just think the whole coaching, the evolution of coaching at what the age is, because we're teaching the same stuff from high school to those 10-year-olds. It's the verbiage is different.
So yeah, anyway. And I don't want to stomp on your state, but when you said, have you ever known a high school coach that, I won't mention names because he was a player, he was a major league player, and his son was leading off and playing shortstop, and maybe he shouldn't have been because it was his son playing at the same time. So, again, I think it's kind of a daddy thing, and I think, I mean, believe me, it's 1% of 1% where it's happening, but for the good coaches will play their best players
in
order
to
put them in the best
position. But I
bet if
you took his son away every other year, he's playing the best kids.
Right.
You know, I agree. Yeah. That stuff happens. And it, hey, that's a whole other topic. I coached my two boys, right? But I take pride in the fact that when people would come and say, you would never know those are your, because I'm harder on them than they were, you know. And the one thing I will tell you, they were leaders. That was my biggest thing, was lead. You know, when my son, my older son Josh was getting the water on a Saturday as a senior, when that's the younger kid, I said, Josh, why are you getting the water buckets? Because you know what, when I was a sophomore, the older guys thought it was cool that, you know, they'd laugh at us because I was the coach's son. You know, those younger guys are going to appreciate me. Why can't I go get the water? And I said, God, I learned more from those, my kids, you know. So that's, you know, great.
And I'd also be remiss, just really quickly, what Coach Pudge said is that my dad and I butted heads a whole lot. We argued a whole lot. But when he was my baseball coach, he's in the top three of guys that I've seen being able to manage a team, manage me as fairly, right? It's not about being equal. Pat Summitt said, I don't treat everybody equally. I treat them fairly. And my dad, to a T, we may have butted heads off the field, but on the field, he did an amazing job of listening and not being over or under, which is it's amazing.
I want to touch on that. This is a really cool story for coaches who have kids. We're Josh's, again, he was a left-handed arm. Trevor's my younger son. He was an infielder. But Josh, we're playing at our rival in conference at Chantilly his junior year. And at the time, he was a soft lefty. Since then, he's grown, and he's, you know, which helped him because now that fastball's fun. But anyway, we're in the dugout. We're in pregame. We run on the field for BP. He's getting the start on the mound that day. And I'm on the other end. I got my back turned. It's just him and I in the dugout. I didn't know it was him. He goes, Coach, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to just go through routine, or you want me to shag up? And I turned around and I go, Josh, there's nobody else here. You can call me dad. He's like, no, you're a coach. And I thought that was cool.
That's fantastic.
I thought that was, you know what? And that's what told me, all right, he gets it. And he, that's, you know, I tell that story quite a bit because kids need to understand that too.
That's great.
That's a respect factor.
Well, I can tell you guys that, you know, I think that what we did in Kansas City is just the beginning. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm really excited about the direction that we're going to be moving in to get this thing going. And I want to see where it goes.
Well, I appreciate you guys. And, like, getting to meet Coach Gallo out there, like, this is why we do this, you know, just these meeting guys like you guys. I'm telling you, like, you know, Jimmy, we're all sitting this around this table, and you've got all these people that are passionate. And that's the fun part for me, and I always leave with something anywhere I go. And this has been great today, and just thanks. And again, I can't wait for next year. Like, let's just keep working toward answers, just not talking about problems. So
and
thank you guys.
I really think that the way we do it is by what we're doing right now. Just
if
sitting around
talking.
If we all
work together, we can do more.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. My new circle of friends that started it with the you know, I was kind of the newcomer coming in. I was happy that Rob and Ryan Brownlee had me in there. And, you know, the Kansas City guys that we met that we're hanging out with that are here at the ABC also, I think they were on here too. And it's about relationships. And
I thought the Kansas City Royal guy, they went above and beyond. Those guys, what a special organization they are.
Treated us like royalty.
I had heard that. And, man, I you know, it was great.
It really was. And
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate you.
In the end, what comes out is now I have two more guys that I can call friend, and I'm loving every minute of it. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. I don't like to say I told you so, but I told you so. Paul Gallo, Pudge Jorman, two of the best baseball minds right there at the top. I mean, I know that I enjoyed the conversation immensely, and, you know, I hope you did too. So we're going to try and be a little bit more consistent with our episodes. I know we've had a long hiatus there for a while, but we should be back on track, and, you know, stay with us. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It'll let you know when new content is released, so you won't miss out on any of the amazing information that our guests such as Paul and Pudge have to offer. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, now known as X, or shoot us out an email at clearingthebases@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. So, again, like all of our other conversations, I don't know if you picked up on it, but I can tell you for sure that Paul Gallo, Pudge Jorman, they know people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on the next one.